Twilight by Tuesday Love Sang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 9. I have just had my very meager meal, and that reminds me of a question which arrived only yesterday, barely in time for this book, is it? Because it's going ahead. Anyway, I had a letter yesterday saying, please write another book, and please put in something about fasting. What do you think about fasting? Should people fast? What harm can it cause anyway? So I can only reply, glory be, missus, I've been fasting for years. Seriously, though, fasting with brains is a very good thing indeed, provided you take some common sense precautions. For example, you don't go fasting if you're a diabetic. You don't go fasting if you've got certain types of heart disease. But if you are in average good health, then it really does help to fast at times, provided you don't have to do a full day's work at the same time. You would not have an automobile and expect it to work if the fuel tank was empty, so why should you expect your own human body to work when there is no feed left for it to draw upon? Normally, it is perfectly safe to fast when you have a vacation, because when you have a vacation, you can rest more. You do not have to run for the bus. You do not have to put an extra spurt of work when the boss glances in your direction. You can do it on your own time. So, if you are going to fast, make sure that you're in reasonably good health and do not have any of those diseases or complaints, such as diabetes, because you can upset yourself by fasting if you are diabetic. Assured on these points, then you should make sure that your internal plumbing is in good order and that you're not suffering from hold up in the rear delivery department. You should take a mild laxative so that you're fairly empty inside. Then you stop eating, but you do not stop drinking. If you're fasting, you'd be well advised to take anything which the medical profession calls a clear liquid diet. Plenty of water, fruit juices, but nothing of a solid nature whatever, not even milk, because milk is too solid for this purpose. Now, do not think that you're going to fast and suck candies. That's not fasting, that's cheating. That's making the whole thing a farce. So stop eating, do quite a bit of resting. You can read, listen to radio, or watch TV, but no gallivanting off to the cinema or to the pub or to anything of that nature. If you do, you will deplete your fat resources faster than will be comfortable. You see, if you're going to fast, your body has got to keep on working, and the only way it can keep on working is to gradually absorb the stored up food in your body cells. That means in your fat cells. And if you go racing around, going out on social occasions or doing manual work, then you will lose the weight too quickly and will definitely risk collapse. To give you an idea of what I'm talking about, let me tell you that, of late, there have been an astonishing number of really obese people who have had an operation to short-circuit perhaps 6 or 10 feet of their intestines so they do not absorb their food so much. If too much of the intestine has been short-circuited, then the person loses weight too rapidly and all sorts of strange things happen. There was one woman weighing over 300 pounds. I think she weighed about 350 pounds, actually. And she had 10 feet of intestine short-circuited. She was moaning and groaning with dismay because she lost weight so rapidly that she felt dreadfully ill most of the time, and her flesh was draped about her in folds, which is not a good thing for a lady who has some pride in her appearance. Go carefully, then, if you're going to fast. Stop eating and stop working. Rest a lot, and by rest, it is meant that you should not go out and go shopping or go to entertainments. If you want to fast and get all the benefits of fasting without any of the drawbacks, you will have to forego not merely food, but mobility. You need a lot of fluid. Otherwise, you will become dehydrated, and if you're dehydrated, you will affect your health very badly. It is a horrible thing to happen to one. Certain people with poor health find that if they do fast, their liver becomes affected, so make sure that your health is good enough before you go in for any of these things, like fasting. And how long should you fast? Well, until you start seeing things, if you like. You can go 4 to 5 days without food with much good result. Before I went into hospital this last time, I was without any food at all for just over 10 days, and when I got in the hospital, I was without food for a few more days. It didn't do me any harm. So you can only say that you fast so long as you feel the need to fast. You should not fast more than 4 or 5 days without taking the advice of your doctor. And if he is the ordinary crummy type of fellow who can see no further than his medical textbooks, he will tell you straight out that you are crazy to fast. But that is because he's never done it. But for your own protection, you should always get medical advice if you're going to fast more than 4 or 5 days. When you start to eat after, well, don't just gulp down half a cow, or you will have all sorts of troubles, indigestion and all the rest of it, and very bad indigestion it will be. When you are fasting, your stomach shrinks. It shrinks to the size of a small egg, because there's no reason why it should be distended if you're not taking in food. Well, after 5 days or so, your stomach is the size of a small egg, and it has become used to being that size. So, if you suddenly get sick of fasting and cram down a whole load of stuff, then your stomach will have to distend far more than it likes doing, so you will get pain, and your intestines will have shrunk through having no material inside, and the intestines too will have to stretch enormously. Believe me, if you go and gormandize after 5 days of fasting, you will get more aches and pains than you thought possible from such a simple thing. After a fast, take very light meals, milk and a few biscuits. Next day, take a bit more, but do not go back to your normal food intake until about 3 or 4 days after. In that way, you will get good results from your fast. But Contrarywise, if you go and stuff yourself after a fast, you will get all harm, which will make your fast useless. Now, here is something I'm going to tell you. I've got a letter here, and the writer says, I have several times attempted to visit you in the astral. I always see someone who slightly resembles you, but who is quite weird indeed. The person always attempts to play the part of you, but they're quite poor actors. Perhaps you are too busy doing other things in other worlds to be seen. Perhaps before this letter is completed, you might be visited by me, even though I am still in the prehistoric stage of astral traveling. My dear madam, I am delighted to tell you that I have an effective barrier so that people cannot visit me in the astral unless I want them to. You see, I get lots of people, literally lots, who tell me they're going to visit me in the astral, and if they all could do so, then I should have no privacy. I should have no time for myself. And would you like a crowd of people visiting you when you were in the bath, for example? I do not. So, through knowledge, which was given to me many, many years ago, I've been able to make a barrier, which means that I cannot be visited by any Earth person unless I am willing to be so visited. You have seen mischievous entities, such as people see at seances. I have written about this before, so there's no point in going into detail, but quite a lot of people in the between worlds want to be humans. They are entities now, bundles of life force without much sentient thought. In fact, as I've already said, they're like mischievous monkeys. And if a person tries to visit me and I don't want to see them, then one of these mischievous entities will move in and pretend to be me. So if people try to visit me, they've only got themselves to blame. People send me all manner of demands that I should visit them. Some send me intricately marked maps or photographs showing precisely where they live, and they command me to appear at such and such a time. Well, of course, I do no such thing. Would you go flitting about in the astral just because some creep who has paid a few pence for a book thinks he or she has the right to dictate to the author? Pox on them, is what I say. There are only 24 hours in the day, and if I did obey these imperious demands, I should need 30 hours at least. Furthermore, these people have no conception of the difference in time. I live in a mountain time zone, but what about a person in Tokyo demanding my presence? There is quite a lot of difference in time. In fact, it's the next day. So, why should I bother to work out what time it is in that other location, or what day it is? No, people who demand or command my presence as though I were a slave of a lamp or something else, they've got another thing coming. They might even have two things coming. It's quite amusing, too, because sometimes I get demands from people that I should instantly appear and find a pen which they have mislaid, or a ring, or a letter, Oh, yes, I am perfectly sincere in that. I had a most imperial command just a short time ago. A person had put down something and couldn't find it, and she wanted to wear it that night, so she thought she could will me to come, and I would instantly appear on the spot and produce the goods for her. Well, I think she should go back to reading Atlantean and his magic lamp, don't you? Or perhaps she should grow up instead. Here's something I'm sure will make you laugh. I will copy it out for you now. Last night, when I was astral traveling, I decided to go on a teaching spree. Suddenly, as I was walking along, I noticed I had a beautiful orange saffron robe on. I was so thrilled. Astral clothes are so beautiful. I had decided I was going to teach some people when suddenly, as I was walking along, the saffron robe disappeared and I was stark naked. My mind went blank. The last thing I remember is standing naked in the middle of a public building without any clothes on. Yes, that's what happens, you see. People go into these things without any preparation. This person did indeed get into the astral, but forgot to keep a corner of the mind, astral mind, continually on her clothing. So as soon as she decided that she was going to teach some people who already knew more than she did, the little bit of her mind which should have been dealing with clothes switched off. And then, well, she was embarrassed standing in the middle of this public building with, no doubt, quite a crowd of interested onlookers. Well, wouldn't you be interested as well if you suddenly saw a woman appear naked in front of you? The streakers nowadays seem to attract a lot of attention, so you judge for yourself what your reactions would be. This particular person wants me to mention her by name, but unfortunately I can't even read her name. And I can't read her address either because she didn't give any. So I can only refer to her as the Nameless One. She also wants to know, when will flying saucers start coming in great numbers? Well, actually, I shall be surprised if there are not many more reports of flying saucers in the immediate future, and I'm going to suggest something to you. Just think of this. You will have read from time to time that naval ships of Norway, Denmark, Sweden, or somewhere else have bottled up a submarine in one of the fjords, and there is no possible way for it to escape. Fine, we all read about that, we all hear about it on the radio, and we are convinced that this unknown submarine, which it is hinted must obviously be Russian, is bottled up and it cannot escape. Warships of the United Nations are there in force with all their submarine detection gear, and they are ready to blow the submarine straight out of the water if it doesn't surrender. You've read about that in the newspapers, haven't you? You've heard it on the radio, haven't you? All right. Now, think of this. Did you ever hear of any result? Did you? I think you did not, because everything is hushed up, and I have reason to believe that there are UFOs which come from inside the earth and which are able to navigate underwater just as submarines do. And I believe that these UFOs are sometimes detected by ships of different nations, but these UFOs can always escape. There was a prediction made many, many years ago to the effect that this year, 1974, there would be a confrontation between ships of the world and a UFO under the water. The prediction is to the effect that there would be a collision between a submarine and a UFO, and some of the UFO people would be rescued, and then it would be seen quite clearly that they were not humans, as the term is understood on the surface of the earth. Predictions could be a little time out, you know, so I really think something like that will happen in 1974 or 1975 if it has not already happened. I say, if it has not already happened, because it seems so strange to me that things are hushed up so much by governments. We hear that a submarine has been trapped. Much commotion is caused. Many reports are given, almost hour by hour reports, and then suddenly, nothing. Nothing more is said. Everything is forgotten. No matter what inquiries are made, no one knows anything about it anymore. It's just as if it did not happen. Now, if some aliens had been found and possibly rescued from a UFO, then of course the governments would step in and conceal all the knowledge from those who have a right to know, the people. Until the governments concerned decided how the knowledge could be best turned to the advantage of the governments concerned. Here's another nice question. Under what conditions can you gain access to the Akashic Records to find out another person's future? You cannot, if you're a normal human, without very, very special lifetime training. The Akashic record of each person is closed and cannot be seen by any other human, normally, until the subject of that record leaves the earth and is in the Hall of Memories, where the poor wretch has to see it all and blush alarmingly with shame. I think this particular correspondent should go to a good eye specialist, because he writes, "Dr. Rampa, did you know that you have an amazing resemblance to King Faisal of Saudi Arabia?" "Yes, quite definitely," I state, "that there was a picture of King Faisal on a Time magazine, and you look just like him." "King Faisal, Your Majesty, may I offer you my humble apologies, because if you look like me, well, you sure have got a load on you. Personally, I don't see any resemblance except that King Faisal has two eyes, one nose, one mouth, and two ears. And yes, I have just that. Two eyes, one nose, one mouth, and two ears. And oh yes, then of course there must be a resemblance. But then I think King Faisal has a lot more hair than I have. I am bald. In fact, the flies use the top of my head as a skating rink in hot weather." Question: is it possible to have a physical or astral child as a result of astral intercourse? No, not a chance. Although, to believe some of my correspondents, it not merely is possible, but it does occur. For example, when I was living in Prescott, Ontario, many years ago, I had a woman write to me. I've never seen her, never been closer to her than a few hundred miles, and she told me that she was now pregnant by me, and she was going to bear my child. According to her, I visited her in the astral and, let me be delicate here, gave her the works. Well, that was certainly news to me. I seem to have missed all the fun because I certainly don't know anything about it. The poor lady didn't seem to realize that the husband with whom she sleeps and with whom she presumably does other things may have been more responsible than I was. But anyway, I will tell you, no, it is not possible to go around in the astral impregnating women. Sorry to spoil your fun, but there it is. You can't do it. Now, this is a good question, and it is, sometimes I see small children who seem to be talking to themselves, but who were really talking to someone. They usually stare as if they're looking directly at someone that I can't see. They sometimes carry on long conversations. Who are they talking to? Nature spirits? Also, can't little children see into the astral world at any time they wish? Of course, these children are able to talk to and see people in the astral. It's a simple matter indeed, because when a child is small, their vibrations are higher, and so they can get in touch with people in the astral whose vibrations are lower. There are also special spirit friends who look after children. In other words, fairies are real. And not until stupid parents tell their children they mustn't tell lies, and of course they don't see other people, do the children lose the ability. In fact, parents are a child's worst friends. Parents too often think that they are omnipotent, the source of all knowledge. They try to dominate their children, and they crush out and ruin natural abilities of the child. It is a very sad thing. It is adults who make it so difficult for astral people to contact this world. Do you want to smile? Well, what would you answer to a question like this? Why can't Buddhist monks get married? Let me answer that with a question. And the question is, why cannot Catholic priests get married? Obviously, because it is a facet of the religion, of the religious discipline. Many churches, not merely Christian churches either, think that a man must devote his whole life to that religion. He must, in effect, marry the religion. Many churches or many religions believe that if a man marries, then his mind might be on other things, the attractions of his wife, for instance, and then he would not be able to give full attention to his religious duties. That is why Catholics and some other priests do not marry. But there are many Buddhist monks of different sects who do marry, just as there are many different types of Christian priests who do marry. Protestant priests marry, Catholic priests do not. It's just a matter of belief, and that's all there is to that. I have a regular correspondence with a lady and gentleman who have a son who has a mental defect. The sun is retarded. Unfortunately, medical science does not seem able to do much for such people, and often they try to persuade the parents of such a child to commit the child to some home for the mentally defective. This particular boy is improving, and I believe that in time, with the loving care of his parents, he will become very much more normal. It seems that when he was a baby, a doctor treated him unwisely and tried out a new drug on the small baby, giving it a dosage which would have overpowered a strong adult. From that time on, the boy has suffered very great mental strain, and he cannot speak. But I believe that his mental health is improving. I've suggested that he be sent to friends on a farm, because often if a person is mixing with animals, etc., who are less privileged than he, then a great improvement takes place, as the boy or girl does all he can, or all she can, to help and to understand the animals. In many cases, a retarded child seeing an animal gets a type of fellow feeling. The child thinks that the animal cannot talk either, and so that gives him a bond. And when such a child is given the run of a farm and given tasks within his or her capabilities, then the responsibility does start up and sparks a response in the intelligence. It is such a shame, such a crime, to just rush retarded people off to a mental home where there is any hope at all that kindness at home or kindness and understanding on a farm will enable the retarded one to become less retarded. I have known many cases where Mongolian idiots, and they're not idiots by any means, have been greatly improved by being placed in a position where they can help with animal husbandry. Do you remember in a previous book that I had made a prediction that the president of the USA would be removed from office? Well, as I write this, we are waiting for President Nixon to announce his resignation. The poor fellow has had enough pressure, certainly, and according to what one reads in the papers, he is certainly having some nervous strain, which may have affected his mental health. But anyway, predictions sometimes come right, you know. But I have been told, quite reliably, that President Nixon, probably former president when you read this, was informed by a quite well-known woman astrologer, or whatever she is, that nothing would happen to him. Well, she wasn't very successful, was she? Actually, everything comes in cycles. You get troubles with kings, presidents, and all the rest of it in certain cycles. So if you know where to look, you can find out about these periodic cycles. In the same way, you can find out fairly accurately when a next war is going to happen. If you had been sufficiently interested to work out the dates of wars, and you had drawn a graph of them, you would have found that they follow a more or less regular pattern. Everything happens like that, you know. Even with human life, Everything happens in cycles, as every woman knows, and then there are cycles of the moon's phases. But in addition to that, there are the cycles which affect humans most of all, such as the 23-day cycle of ups and downs of health, and the 28-day cycle, and another cycle which occurs over a period of 33 days. We get the health, the nervous energy, and the intellect all fluctuating from top to bottom. And obviously, as the three cycles come together at fairly long intervals, then one can have an extremely good period for a day or so, or an extremely bad period for a day or so. I keep a regular chart of my cycles, that is, the 23-day, the 28-day, and the 33-day cycles, and quite recently, I was at a peak of what passes for good health with me, as was predicted by the three cycles. But then, there came the decline of the three cycles all in a bunch, and the result of that was that I was carted off to the hospital, a very sick fellow indeed, with more pain than I like to think about. Then I stayed in the hospital until the cycles changed around and permitted me to feel better, after which I came out again. All life has cycles of this type, and if you know how, they can be charted. Not only that, but if you know how, you can find out the cycles of world events. What's going to happen in this country? What's going to happen to that? What sort of person is going to be assassinated next? And what those naughty little Russian lads are going to do to upset the equanimity of the world? It is a pity that the Russians are so xenophobic, because they make a lot of misery for themselves, always being absolutely positive that everyone else is against the poor little Russians. Whereas, actually, most of the time, people couldn't care two hoots for the Russians. They play pretty rough, though, as I know, to my own cost. Would it not be a very pleasant thing if we could get our lords and masters, who pose as a democratic elected government, to prepare proper charts showing world events, and when we can expect an increase in income tax, or, oh wonderful event, a decrease in income tax, although the latter doesn't seem possible. The governments are always willing to put up the prices, to increase the taxes, etc., but they never do a darn thing about reducing them, do they? The income tax thing, I believe it came in under one of the terms of the Defense of the Realm Act, or the DORA, in England during the 1914-1918 war. It was just a temporary measure which was going to be repealed at the end of the war. Well, now, here in Canada, as well as in the USA, the government of the country imposes a whacking great tax, and then the province or state take their bite as well by imposing a big tax. And in some places, there is a third income tax, that which is imposed by a money-hungry city. It reminds me of the sort of life an author lives. First of all, he pays commission to one or two agents, and then he pays income tax in the country which is publishing a book. And then he loses money on the rate of exchange, it's never in my favor. Then he's got to pay tax, poor fellow, in his own country. And if he's particularly unlucky, he has to pay federal tax and then provincial tax. And if this is not his day, he has to pay city tax as well. After that, he may find that there's some sort of a school tax, because the Catholics, for some strange reason, seem to have twisted the arm of governments so that they can dun money out of people to help pay for the schooling of little Catholics. It's a strange, strange world, isn't it? But my respected friend, Paddleboat Moffat, has a question. Paddleboat loves ships, and because of his love of ships, I've renamed him Paddleboat, a name which he seems to thoroughly enjoy. Paddleboat Moffat is a very gifted model maker. To my disgust, he has been making silly old sailing ship models of an age long past. After all, who wants to know about ships which are mere lumps of wood blown along by a bit of cloth stuck on a bit of a stick called a mast? All the best modelers make paddle boat models or good old steamships, and so Paddleboat Moffat, fired by his new name, is now busy making a paddle boat. But he is puzzled about the Marie Celeste. You probably all know about her, but if there is Aunt Agatha out there who doesn't know, let me tell you, Auntie, that the Marie Celeste is, or was, a sailing ship which was plying her regular route across the seas, and then one day, or rather one evening, an oncoming ship saw the Marie Celeste coming toward her with all sails set, booming along in front of the wind. But, like this book, it was twilight, and according to marine law, the Marie Celeste should have had lights showing. But there were no lights, and the people aboard the oncoming ship were perturbed at several things which seemed wrong with the Marie Celeste. So after quite a long chase, some of the men from the spectator ship were able to board the Marie Celeste and lower the sails. Then they got goose flesh, or whatever it is that seamen get when they're scared stiff, because there was no one aboard the Marie Celeste. No one at all. Everything was perfectly in order. Even a meal was laid out on a table waiting for an unknown diner. Throughout years and years, many conjectures have been made as to what happened aboard the Marie Celeste. There was no sign whatever of any violence. So what could it have been? The lifeboats were there, so the crew could not have taken off from what they thought was a sinking ship. The ship was perfectly in order, nothing at all wrong with it, except the crew were not aboard, and that's all. There have been quite a lot of ships like that. The ships have been intact, in perfect order, and yet there's been no one aboard. And then if you will read my other books, you will read about the Bermuda Triangle, in which not only ships have lost their crews, but the ships themselves have disappeared. Aircraft have disappeared as well, and in at least one authenticated case, voices were heard on the radio, fading out in eerie, ghostly fashion. Paddleboat Moffat wants to know, what happened? Well, there's another time dimension which crosses our world. There is another world intermingled with ours. A lot of people say, well, if that's so, then why can't we see it? You can't, because it's on a different frequency. Think of it like this. I don't know how many of you are interested in shortwave radio, but quite a number of you will have had the acquaintance of listening to a shortwave station. Oh, let's just say, for example, the BBC on the 31-meter band, and then find that the station appeared to drift off, and instead there would be, perhaps, Moscow, the voice of Moscow, bellowing out propaganda against the capitalist countries. And then, even before one could reach for the tuning knob, the drift would occur again, and bawling Moscow would disappear, and the BBC would come back. All the time, of course, both stations were broadcasting, but the set was tuned to one, and if there was a frequency drift somewhere, the other would come in instead. We get the same thing with the two worlds. The worlds are invisible to each other. But let me put it another way. We, here on this world, see by a certain type of light, but supposing our light was switched off, and something else, perhaps infrared, was switched on, and then we would apparently be in darkness, but a person who could see by infrared light would be able to see perfectly, whereas he would not be able to see at all by our light. So it is that in such a case, if our world is at one frequency and our twin world is at another frequency, then there is no interaction between them. So one world is not aware of another. But in, by way of illustration only, the two worlds intermingling at the Bermuda Triangle particularly, then there is a drift. Any poor soul at the point of the drift would possibly find that he'd slipped from one world into the other. He would get a nasty shock, wouldn't he? The other world is a twin of this world, so when he had sailed or flown over the barrier and into this other world, he would be in a similar type of world and in a similar location on that world, but he wouldn't know the language. He might not even see so well. He might find that he was seeing almost as one would see at twilight. Can't get away from that word, can I? But you can rest assured that people from the other world come to this one as well. In fact, I know of a definite, authentic case where it happened in Argentina because I was near at the time. But that's another story. So, Paddleboat Moffat, the Marie Celeste, and other ships could still sail if they went over the border. But it might even be that, in the case of the Marie Celeste, the crew were taken off for examination by a UFO, or even by another ship, which was on the other side of the barrier. Either is possible, and both have happened in the case of other ships. End of chapter 9.